This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our guest is Caitlin Glover. Caitlin is with the Public Lands Council and joins us in just a moment. How about first, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey on corn?
Looking at our 18 production states listed in the USDA NAS table, we saw progress greater than 20% planted during the week in six of those states, led by North Dakota, a big advance from 25 to 58% planted. With that takes North Dakota well ahead of its five-year average of 40%. We also saw progress of 30% during the week or greater in Wisconsin and Michigan, the other three states achieving at least one-fifth planting progress during the week, Colorado, Illinois, and South Dakota. So a pretty good week despite the cool weather in parts of the northern Corn Belt for corn planting.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our guest today is Caitlin Glover. Caitlin is the Executive Director for the Public Lands Council in Washington, D.C. Caitlin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Hey, I know this already, but it's been a while since we've talked, and some may not know this already, but when we talk about Public Lands Council, we're talking about something that's kind of in your wheelhouse. I mean, you grew up around ag, did you not?
I did. So I'm from Wyoming, a state where animals vastly outnumber people. So growing up in Wyoming, was really fortunate to grow up in the midst of a massive agricultural community. Cattle production was surrounding us on all sides. I worked at a feedlot for a while, of course, was in FFA and grew up through that system, and went to the University of Wyoming where I studied agriculture. And, you know, at that time, not to date myself, but it was very early days of the agriculture communications pathway. So I was able to study animal science and agroecology and rangeland science, some ag business and water and range law thrown in, and really, you know, have that sort of development of the fulsome education that has really benefited me here in this role and in my previous roles, where I get to spend all of my time talking about natural resource issues and public lands issues, and working for the cattle and sheep producers who produce the finest food and fiber in the world.
Okay, and that's a perfect segue kind of into the Public Lands Council. And obviously, National Cattlemen's Beef Association is tied into this, and you also brought sheep into this as well. How does all that work?
So the Public Lands Council was created in the late 1960s while the government and Congress at the time were really grappling with some pretty significant questions around natural resource management. Things like the Federal Land Policy and Management Act that was enacted in the 70s, the Endangered Species Act, Clean Air, Clean Water. And cattle and sheep producers looked around Washington, D.C. and realized that they didn't have a specific voice to speak for those Western producers who were on federal grazing allotments, who had that very unique relationship with the federal government as part of that leaseholding relationship. So the Public Lands Council was created as a true council. Today, we have affiliates in all 14 Western states where federal lands grazing exists, those grazing areas on the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service lands, as well as three national affiliates. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is one of those, the American Sheep Industry is one, and the Association of National Grasslands is the third. And so we operate as a true council. We represent everybody who has a federal grazing permit. There are about 22,500 grazing permits across the West. So the membership is quite broad, but is highly regionalized. So the really neat thing that I get to do, because we have three national organizations as part of our affiliate structure, I get to activate the full cattle industry, the full sheep industry, and everybody who grazes on national grasslands, even in those really private land heavy states, for the interests of those producers in the West and some of the unique issues that they face, or that they face more commonly than producers in other parts of the country.
We're talking with Caitlin Glover with the Public Lands Council. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Guest today, Caitlin Glover, Public Lands Council. Caitlin, let's talk about grazing now. Busy week?
Man, it has been a big week, Tony. Earlier this week, we saw the Bureau of Land Management act on two massive priorities for these public lands producers. And, you know, the ripple effects are going to be felt across the country. When the Biden administration finalized the public lands rule, the prior version had been called the Conservation and Landscape Health Rule, but the final version was just called the Public Lands Rule. They finalized that rule in 2024, and immediately PLC and our partners stepped forward with a legal challenge to that rule because we believed that it was illegal, it was ill-founded, and it would be bad for public lands across the West. It would be bad for public lands writ large, right? Not just grazing on public lands, but this concept of multiple use management, where the agencies are supposed to manage these lands for complementary and balanced multiple uses. That means things like recreation grazing should be able to coexist or exist productively in the same spaces because of the way the government manages them. Under the public lands rule from the last administration, they would have established a brand new leasing system, not authorized by Congress, established a new prioritization, putting some uses over others, that really would have disadvantaged the longstanding expectation and legal agreements that grazing permittees had with the Bureau of Land Management. And BLM manages about 155 million acres of grazing land across the West. And so this was a pretty significant deal. This week, the Trump administration rolled back that Biden rule. They have completely rescinded it. That rescission is going to go into effect in early June. And I'm sure that you're going to be hearing me celebrate from there when that rule goes officially into the category of having the full force and effect of law. But you know, there's also another update this week that is crucial. We have for three decades wanted the BLM to update BLM grazing regulations. This is the sort of the toolkit, the rule book for how the agency manages grazing on those 155 million acres. The 1995 regulations, which have essentially been the rules of the road since 1995, those were developed in a time immediately following an environmental activist campaign that they called Cattle Free by 1993. That campaign was designed to remove livestock grazing from federal land. And so when the final rule on grazing rules went into effect just 2 years later, we saw things that were really, really harmful for grazing permittees across all of these states. This week, the Bureau of Land Management issued the first set of and most substantive set of regulatory updates, proposed updates to this rule since the early 2000s. And this, you know, it's a proposed process. It's a process that we will be engaging in over the next several months. But establishing more flexibility, establishing some updated science and updated way we do analysis on the rangelands, making sure that process manages on the matches on the ground realities. It's great news. So like I said, it's been a big week.
You know, and I know there's been some discussion on some roundtables as well. What can you tell us about these roundtables? Who's it for, and what are we trying to accomplish?
Sure. The roundtables have gone really well so far. So I think maybe taking a couple months worth of steps back, you know, these regulatory changes that I just talked about are really important, because those are the sort of actionable rules, the actionable guidelines that the agency uses. But a lot of times the administration, the White House secretaries use a variety of tools to set their department's intent or agency's intent. And earlier this year, we saw the BLM and the Department of the Interior sign a memorandum of understanding saying that they wanted to improve coordination between the BLM and Forest Service, not only for the benefit of the agencies, but for the benefit of the rangelands and the permittees. And as part of that process, both departments identified a desire to improve relationships between the agency staff and permittees. And so PLC saw this as a great opportunity to get agency staff, agency leadership out into the West and have some real conversations. PLC has been hosting conversations like this on a regular basis and on an annual basis in our Western state affiliates, supporting these kind of dialogues. But we really point to this MOU and the Grazing Action Plan released by the departments at the end of last year. And we scheduled 11 roundtables around the West this spring. We secured commitments from BLM and Forest Service to attend these roundtables. We advertised to permittees, you know, if you have a federal grazing permit or a lease, or you're part of an association, come and provide feedback, provide regulatory feedback, provide, you know, some suggestions to the agency that, you know, your local staff might hear, but the people in Washington might not. So it really augments and supports the conversations, you know, to these very highly technical conversations that we're having on regs here in Washington by facilitating some of these conversations. We're sitting here on the 14th of May. We've had 5 of these state-based roundtables. We have 6 more to go over the next couple weeks. And so we're gathering that, you know, that feedback to develop, you know, what are trends that we're seeing in opportunities for improvement around the West? And then what are some of those highly localized or regionalized issues that the agency needs to address immediately in order to be able to improve grazing and improve those relationships on the ground?
Talking with Caitlin Glover, Public Lands Council. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Caitlin Glover, Public Lands Council. Caitlin, how do we stay in touch?
Publiclandscouncil.org. If you're on Facebook or Instagram, we're also there as well at Public Lands Council. And you can keep up not only with where and how to register for or RSVP for these roundtables, but also keep up on how to engage as we go through what is sure to be a regulatory comment gauntlet over the next couple months. You know, the rescission of the public lands rule, the BLM grazing regulations are two great examples, but we know that there are going to be more of these rulemakings coming, more opportunities for permittees to weigh in and to engage. And so folks can stay up to date with us and how they can represent themselves in their areas by visiting anywhere we are online.
Caitlin Glover is the executive director for the Public Lands Council. She's in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
On efforts to expand domestic fertilizer production, short-term and long, at USDA headquarters Tuesday.
The Blue Point project in Louisiana. Within 45 days, we should see permitting wrapped up on this project to build a $3.7 billion ammonia plant, which, when opened, will become the world's largest ammonia plant.
Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, joined by other cabinet and congressional members, also announced the resumption of USDA's fertilizer production expansion program, expediting projects previously stalled by regulations.
I think that this is a really important long-term step, but we're taking these steps immediately to get to the goal of reshoring all fertilizer to our country.
A future action, now under congressional consideration, a USDA input economist that would lead a team heading department efforts in fertilizer market transparency. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's the Agribusiness Report.